Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Podcast. What is up, College Cross fans? You're watching episode 256 of the Lax Factor Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Hoos. Today we are going to recap games from Sunday, and we're going to recap the Loyola and the Georgetown game from last night. Before I get into that, as always, be sure to like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, and or just share the crap out of the podcast with your friends. And as always, you can go to laxfactor.com. You can support us that way by watching the videos through there, figuring out what videos are out, what podcasts are out, and what isn't. And you can also get Lax Factor podcast-related gear or non-podcast-related gear, just regular lacrosse t-shirts and things like that, so you can support us that way. I want to shut the heck up, though, and I want to dive into the first game we're going to talk about today. That is going to be number five Penn State, taking on number 15 Michigan. Now, through three quarters, Michigan outplayed Penn State. It wasn't always pretty, but it was working. Michigan took a 9-6 lead with just 15 seconds left in the third quarter after Josh Zawada got left all alone on the right wing and Bryce Clay found him. Easy step-down score for Zawada. But then the wheels came off badly for Michigan because Jack Trainer is an absolute nasty freak. His first goal of the game, winning run, came off a dish by Kyle Aldridge just 52 seconds into the fourth quarter. Fast break goal where Aldridge held the ball just long enough out top to free Trainer up down low just off the side of the crease. And now it's 9-7 favor of Michigan. Next two Jack Trainer goals were both dished by Ethan Long on extra man opportunities. The first was a rip from the right wing that beat Carr stick side high with 13:21 left in the fourth quarter. Top left corner, nice rip with a defender doing his best to break down and get out on him. 9-8 Michigan at this point. His second consecutive extra man goal, the third consecutive goal of the run for him, came with 6:36 left in the game. Same feeder and location. This time he sent it off stick low, bottom right, beautifully placed shot, tied up at nines. Let me fix my notes there. TJ Malone was stupid selfish and decided to break up Trainer's goal-scoring party. Jake Morin got the assist. Forget that Malone was alone on the crease, and Morin did a great job finding him. This could have been an even better story with Trainer scoring five unanswered, but alas, 10-9 to Penn State. Then Trainer decided he'd score the dagger. This time, a long dodge from the top middle that saw him approach the alley, but he stepped back and ripped a running jumper that beat Shane Carr high. An absolutely filthy take. It was his fourth goal of the quarter, fifth goal in the second half, and his sixth goal overall in the game. Now, Jack Frasian, he was a monster in cage for Penn State, making 17 saves on the day. 13 of those saves came over the course of the second and the third quarters. Without his efforts, this is a big fat L for the Nittany Lions. Michigan won 8 of their first 12 faceoffs over that first half, but Penn State cleaned that up a little bit and then evened things out over the course of the second half. 6-6. But important, they went 4 of 6 over the fourth quarter as four of six over the course of the fourth quarter as they made the run. And I think it was actually 12-12 that they evened it up in over the course of the half. They lost 10 of 24 on the day, but that fourth quarter saved their asses. Chase Mullins was only 10 of 23 overall himself for Penn State at the dot, but he chose a solid time to pick up his game and pull his head out of his ass. Penn State was 3 of 5 on man-up opportunities to Michigan's 0-2, so that factored heavily, especially over the course of those second-half goals that Trainer scored. Those were huge juice goals for the Nittany Lions, and they came at terrible times for Michigan. And then in the end, Michigan outplayed Penn State for three quarters, but Trainer and company did just enough over the course of that final quarter to eke out the win. If we dive into the stats here and we look at what people did for Penn State, you see Jack Trainer, 6 goals off 13 shots, an incredible game. He even had 3 ground balls. Ethan Long was 2-2. TJ Malone 1-1. You see here as we go through the points, not a lot of guys factored because Jack Trainer was a filthy freak. If we look at cause turnovers, nothing serious here. Michigan just kind of continued to shoot themselves in the foot over the course of that second half. Zawada was 2-2. Bryce Clay 3-1. They all looked really good in the first half. second half, just or that especially that fourth quarter, just got away from Michigan, and they couldn't pull it out here. Like I said, Frasian, 9 goals against to his 17 saves, an absolute monster day for him. It became apparent early that the Penn State defense was giving up a lot of quality shots and that it was going to require Frasian to stand on his head to help them win this game. They may have even mentioned that at one point in the telecast that, you know, Frasian was going to have to heat up the way it looked, because if he didn't, it was going to get out of hand. And then you see Shane Carr and Hunter Taylor split time again. Not terrible outings for them. Taylor had the rougher of the outings, but that was partly because Trainer went on a run, and that's it. So that's all she wrote for that one. We're going to talk about the preview and playoff implications. Everybody in the Big Ten makes the tournament, so it really does come down to just, you know, win the tournament and you get in. In the case of Michigan, in the case of Rutgers and some of these other teams that are far more bubble bound and don't really have resumes to get at large bids, it's all that much more important to just win the tournament and get in. Next game, we got to talk about number 4 Maryland against number 9 Rutgers. Now, Rutgers' 16-game win streak at home was broken by Maryland on Sunday, mostly because Rutgers had a stupid hard time matching up with Maryland players off ball. The first 3 goals of the game were all dished by freshman Braden Irksa, the first coming at the 8:51 mark in the first quarter. Irksa got a step at X, came up the right side, drew a slide, found Siracusa get lost in the defense on the high crease. He hits him. Siracusa did the rest. Irksa's second helper came with 5:03 left in the first. Irksa ended up with the ball at X. His man hung up, and he waited patiently until Jack Corris got open to his left. Perfect pass. Easy finish. Irksa's third consecutive assist came with 3:56 left in the first. This time finding Zach Whittier, quick exchange. Irksa was dodging up past GLE into that 5-and-5 region and found Whittier cutting down from the high crease. Now it's 3-zip Maryland. After that, it was Daniel Maltz sniping a step down on a dish from Jack Brennan with 2:44 left in the first. He had just enough time and room to get everything behind it, and he beat Kyle Mullen. Jack Corris would strike again. Nice little two-man game from X with Kyle Long. That resulted in Corris being wide open up that right side, just about GLE. Short little pass. Long hit him. Corris finished 5-0 Maryland. Now, Rutgers would answer a bit, but Maryland kept their foot on the gas, taking a 10-4 lead with 7:46 left in the third. Another assisted goal, this time Zach Whittier finding Daniel Kelly on the crease. Now, Rutgers' off-ball woes resulted in the Terps scoring 8 of their 11 goals off feeds, with Irksa putting up 3 helpers and Corris, Spanos, Whittier, Long, and Brennan all putting up a single dish as well. Luke Wehrman, he was his usual self, winning 14 of 21 at the faceoff dot, but only picked up 5 ground balls. So you got to credit the Maryland wings for getting in on the action and helping Wehrman out. Now, Dugenio did a good job of scrapping on the initial draw, forcing all 6 guys to get in on the action, and the Terps' wings held up. And I actually heard them calling him Dugenio. So have I been calling him Dugenio all this time for like 2 seasons now, and his name's actually Dugenio? Because that would be a lot doper. It sounds good. Now, Brian Ruppel, he outplayed Kyle Mullen in cage. Ruppel stopped 12 of the 20 shots he faced in the net for the Terps, while Mullen saw a little bit more action and couldn't quite keep up, stopping 12 of the 23 shots he faced. That sounded weird the way I said that. Credit the Maryland defense for making Rutgers' life difficult all over the field. Rutgers committed 9 first-half turnovers, and most of them weren't actually forced, but the product of Rutgers just not quite getting in sync. You could say they played off, but I think the Maryland defense did a good job of kind of playing into that a bit. They were pestering them all day. They were winning 1v1 matchups, which resulted in the Scarlet Knights taking poor care of the ball, forcing odd feeds to the crease, and so on. So Rutgers, they did take better care of the ball in the second half, and you can see they kind of tightened things up and got back to within 3 goals after going down 10-4. But at that point, it was too little too late. Maryland had built a big enough lead, and the time just ran out on Rutgers overall. Hell of a job here. So if we pop in here and we look at the Maryland stats, we see Irksa finished the game 1-3, started the game with those 3 assists, and then managed to pick up a goal to help out. Jack Corris was 2-1. Eric Spanos 2-1. You see Maryland's just spreading the scoring out amongst everybody that's playing, doing a very good job of playing solid team offense. They've had to do that all year. They don't have the player pimp that can just beat guys all over the field. Irksa's looking pretty damn good for a youngster, but Maryland has just done a great job playing team defense, team offense, all of that together. If we look at forced turnovers, it's like I said, nobody, Ajax Zapatello had 2 cause turnovers, but a lot, most of Rutgers' issues were just them throwing the ball away themselves. And then if we look at what Rutgers did, Ross Scott 1-4, Jack Amon 2-1, David Sprock 0-1, but you're looking at Dante Coolis kind of cooling off a little bit for Rutgers. They're going to need him to play really tough this weekend. I think they play Friday. We'll talk about that here. And then we come down into the goalie situation. Like I said, Brian Ruppel, 12 saves against, 8 goals against. He slightly outplayed Kyle Mullen and picks up the win. And then we look at our boy Luke Wehrman, 14 of 21 at the dot with 5 GBs. A hell of a day for him overall. All right. We're going to shut. Oh, shit. I just shut my notes down, guys. That's not what we wanted to do. All right. Next game we are going to talk about here is going to be Loyola against Georgetown. Now, this was an absolute bloodbath that I actually didn't see coming. Georgetown's been playing teams pretty tight, even some lower teams. So I figured this would probably be a game coming into it. From the very beginning, though, it was clear that one team was playing fast and clean, and the other team wasn't. The Hoyas came out rolling with transfers scoring 6 of the Hoyas' first 9 goals of the game, and I think they may have scored like 8 of the first 11 or so. The first 2 goals of the game were scored by Syracuse transfer Tucker Dordovic. His first came less than 3 minutes into the game, a dodge to the middle. He got a step or two on Cam Wires and buried it on the run. His second, a little bit more dramatic, a feed from UNC transfer Jacob Kelly that Dordovic fired in backhanded off the crease past Luke Stout about 28 seconds after his first goal. After Loyola actually looked decent for a bit and they tied things up at 2 each, the Hoyas went back to work. This time it was Colgate transfer Brian Minikis. He juked the shit out of his defender, got underneath him, stuck one top left cheese from the left wing. That goal started an 8 goal run for the Hoyas. Then Graham Bundy Jr. got a little bit jelly. He says, "Hey, remember me?" Deposited a rocket into the bottom left corner. He had all day to step down into this one and let it rip, and did so. It was dished by Minikis. Now the score is 4-2 Hoyas. Next possession, Bundy Jr. dodging from the top middle down into the right alley when he found Minikis on the other side of the field up on that right wing. He hit him. Minikis beat Stout to his this time to the top right. And now the score is once again just starting to snowball here. It's 5-2. Nicky Solomon was up next, scored unassisted with 4:40 left in the first quarter. A shot from deep that took an odd bounce at this stage. At this point, they yanked Stout. It was 6-2. Stout was having a really bad day, his second in a row. And they yank him after giving up 6 goals to just 1 save. And this is the second week in a row now that we've seen Stout get yanked. He gave up 6 goals to start their game last week without making a save, and he got yanked. And now this time he's got 1 save to 6 goals. Rough look for a kid that looked at one point this season, over that first half of the season, like he was one of the best keepers in the land. And now over the course of the second half of the season, more importantly, his last 2 games, he's been yanked twice. And that's rough. Now, if you're a goalie that just got yanked and you got a little bit of selfishness in you, the ensuing faceoff, James Riley, he had a monster day at the dot. He won the draw forward, took it to the house and scored. Now it's 7-2 Hoyas. And that's a great way to welcome the new goalkeeper into the game, is score a goal on him within the first 5 to 7 seconds of play. Dordovic, he'd get another. Jordan Ray would score as well. And the run would be capped by Graham Bundy Jr. just 1.5 minutes into the second quarter. He beat his man from the left wing, got underneath, and easily scored as he approached a side crease. 10-2 Georgetown, and that was all she wrote. Riley dominated the dot, which resulted in a ton of make-it-take-it lacrosse for Georgetown. He won 16 of 22 draws, picked up 10 ground balls, scored a goal, and picked up an assist. That's just an absolute huge day for Riley. Danny Hinks got the start in cage for the Hoyas. He stopped 8 of 14 shots. Solid outing overall for him after being demoted to a backup role for the middle stretch of the season after they started 0-3. So I'm not sure what was behind that injury. Maybe they just think he looked better, had a better week of practice or whatever. I'm not entirely sure how that goalie situation is playing out for Georgetown. Now, I can't stress enough how good Georgetown looked all over the field in this one. Offensively, they played clean, crisp lacrosse, especially over the course of that first half. Every dodge was fast. They were aggressive. They dodged into open space. Every pass was fired off clean and hit its mark. Loyola was chasing Dodgers all over the field. They had no answer for any of their individual one-on-one matchups. They looked lost all over the field for the most part. Both on ball, off ball. It was just a terrible day for Loyola defensively. I wouldn't even put any of it really on Stout outside of the fact you didn't make any saves. So now he's got what? He's given up 12 goals over, you know, in his last two starts, he's given up 12 goals and has had only one save and has gotten yanked in both of them. So that's rough for Loyola overall. Defensively, Georgetown was always where they needed to be, making it difficult for Loyola to kind of get anything, to see anything, get any clean shots off. Dodgers weren't getting steps. Passes were high, low, off the mark. It was actually hard to tell if Loyola was just playing like crap or if Georgetown was doing just enough to just make their lives difficult all over the place. That was the end result. I'm going to give Georgetown credit for playing big instead of cutting Loyola down. And then after losing their first three games, the Hoyas, they've now won eight straight, and they're looking pretty damn solid overall. They have wins over teams like Princeton, Richmond, Lehigh, Denver, and now Loyola. No huge marquee wins or anything like that, but their three losses are all to quality opponents, and they've handled their business since those first three losses. They finished the season with St. John's and Villanova, whereas Loyola has no chance but to make the Patriot League tournament and win, as their shot at an at-large is probably toast at this stage. They do have two really solid wins over Maryland and Hopkins, their first two games of the season here, but they haven't beaten a good team since, and they have losses to Navy and Boston U that don't look great on their resume at this stage here. So tough outing for Loyola overall. If we go in here and we look at what Georgetown did, Dordovic finished the game with 5 goals off 11 shots. He's having a hell of a season for Georgetown. Graham Bundy Jr., 2-3 on the day, off 4 shots. That's probably one of the more efficient games he's had. UNC transfer Jacob Kelly, 2-3. UNC transfer Nicky Solomon, 4-1. Colgate transfer Brian Minicus, 2-1. Declan McDermott, 2-0. TJ Haley, 0-2. Those are two of their, you know, holdovers from the season before. So you see they're getting a lot of production out of transfers here. And nothing really to write home about defensively. If we come down and we look at the goalie battle here, you see Hanks, 8 saves to 6 goals against. He did a good job. Every goalie except Max Watkinson did terrible on the day for Loyola. And then if we look at Riley's numbers up here, 16-22, a goal, a dish, 10 GBs, just a hell of a game overall for James Riley. All right, now we get into the portion where we are going to talk about this week's upcoming matchups here. So this is a Friday night game against Penn State and Rutgers. It's, you know, we're sitting teams with similar records here. Penn State at 8-3, Rutgers at 8-4. If we come down and we look at the Big Ten standings, Penn State sitting up here at 3-1, and Rutgers is the flip, 1-3. So these teams are all sitting pretty. What these three teams are doing now is they're jockeying for the bye. All the teams get in. I believe the top two teams have a bye in this Big Ten tournament here. So they're just trying to fight it out to see who's going to pick up the bye, whereas, you know, these teams are just trying to figure out, okay, who's not going to have to play. I guess no matter what, they end up having to play Hopkins or Maryland here. So who knows? But you can see here the basement is between Rutgers, Michigan, and Ohio State at this point. But in the end, it's, you know, both offenses do some damage here. Penn State's probably been quite a bit more efficient because their Big Cats have been scoring more consistently. You look at TJ Malone and Jack Traynor have been very consistent, 48 points for Malone, 39 for Traynor. You look over here, Ross Scott finally is now back to being Rutgers' leading scorer, but, you know, sitting at 37 points with Brian Cameron right behind him at 34 points. I like the Penn State offense at this moment, the way they're playing a little bit more than Rutgers. In terms of goalie play, Kyle Mullen hasn't been bad. He's just a little bit too streaky, whereas Frasian's been pretty damn good overall. He's had some good outings recently, you know, especially coming off this past weekend. But he's sitting at 57% to Mullen's 52%. So I definitely give a bit of an edge to Frasian in terms of being in the cage. And then at the faceoff dot, kind of a draw here. Duhenio, if I'm now saying that correctly, Jonathan Duhenio, he's sitting at 54%, and then we've got Chase Mullins at 51%. Mullins can get hot at times, so, you know, it's one of those deals where I think this will probably come down to, you know, at worst, a 55-45 split, so long as Duhenio doesn't just go off against Mullins, which I don't think he's going to do, then this is going to be a pretty good game here. I'd say I'm going to pick Penn State in this one by a margin, let's say 1-3 goals or so, but I do think that Penn State will pull this win out. And improve to 4-1 in the Big Ten, and Rutgers will drop to 1-4 in the Big Ten, which is actually pretty odd. And the crazy part is that Rutgers is a really good lacrosse team, and they're potentially here sitting at 1-4 in their, if they lose this weekend, they're sitting at 1-4 in their conference. If we come in here and we look at the rankings, I mean, the 11th ranked team in the country is 1-4 in their conference, not too different than what Syracuse is doing right now. But so that should be a good one. But I do think Penn State's going to eke out the win in that one. Now, and I'm not talking a whole lot about at-large bids here for the Big Ten teams, partly because every Big Ten team makes the tournament. So there is no jockeying to get into the tournament to have a chance. They all have a chance because they all get in. This is the game where we've got some teams that are sitting a little bit more on the fence here, because the kicker for Ohio State is, if we go back and we look at the Big Ten standings here, Ohio State does not have a resume right now that's going to get them in. And even worse, they've only got one more game here. Now, if Ohio State loses this game to Michigan, that is going to effectively put them out of the hunt for a tournament bid without winning the Big Ten tournament, because that would put them at 5-8. So their only chance of making the NCAA tournament at that point would be to win the Big Ten tournament. They can't even just advance to the semis and lose, because they'd be below 500 at that point and they would not get in. So this is kind of a must, not even kind of, this is a must win game for Ohio State if they want to have any shot at an at-large bid. And I say they have a shot at an at-large bid because in order to win the Big Ten tournament, or even to advance to the semifinals, they're going to have a chance to pick up two fairly high-quality wins. So winning this game, they still have a shot at an at-large bid if they can win their first two Big Ten tournament games. I don't think they'll get it. They'll be on the bubble still, but they'd at least be in the hunt. They lose this game, their only chance for Ohio State to make the tournament would be to win the Big Ten tournament. I believe that's the case. Michigan is going to be in a similar boat. They lack a resume that's really going to, you know, get them an at-large bid overall. So if they lose this game, similar to Ohio State, they'll then be two games below 500. So they, even if they win the first two games of the Big Ten tournament to get back to 500, you lose the finals, you're under 500, so you can't get in. So for both of these teams, they need to really just win this game, mostly for the purpose of momentum and just to keep their hopes alive here. So Michigan, if they win, they're 6-6. They could win a Big Ten game, lose a Big Ten game, and they're still at least up for consideration. So the goal here is to finish your season, including what you do in the tournament, at 500 or above. Both of these teams need to do that, making this legitimately a must-win for both of them. I don't think either of them have the resume to get an at-large bid in the end. I think they both, Ohio State, if they could finish at 500, has a better chance than Michigan, because if I'm correct here, Michigan has that bad loss. I think that even if Michigan wins this game, wins a Big Ten tournament game, and then loses another game, I don't think their resume is good enough to get them in because of that bad loss. And then they're going to lack quality wins. They got a quality win over Maryland. They could pick up that win over Ohio State, but that's going to drop Ohio State's RPI even more. So for both these teams, pretty much win, don't be losers, get yourself into the tournament. Now, I'm sorry, I closed that here, but let's get into the matchup here and see what happens. I've been surprised that Michigan's actually the better offensive team over Ohio State. I expected Ohio State's offense to play really solid lacrosse this year. Jack Myers has had a disappointing season, shooting the ball poorly, not handling pressure well, and it's showing here in terms of his point totals. I figured he'd be in the area of 5 points a game. Right now he's sitting at, what, three points a game or so, so about 2 points below what everybody, not just me, but what everybody expected him to do. Whereas on the other side, Michigan getting a ton of production out of Bame here, and Zawada, who everyone expected to be their leading scorer, isn't, but that's okay when you got another guy who's willing to step up. So Michigan getting a lot out of their offense. So I say Michigan's offense, especially the way they've been playing more recently, I think the edge goes to them. In terms of Cage, neither team is great here. Skylar Walland has been the better of these two goalies. Shane Carr and Hunter Taylor are splitting time and don't do a bad job between the two of them. They probably are hanging somewhere in the same area as Walland. So slight edge goes to Ohio State and Skylar Walland. And then in terms of the draws, Rowlett and Whitefield have been pretty solid overall, as has Drew Blanchard. So I think that between the both of these teams, I expect multiple guys to take draws. I think that that's kind of a wash here overall. In this one, I'm going with Michigan. I think Ohio State's kind of reeling at this point. Their backs are against the wall, and I have very little reason to believe that they're going to step up and win this game. I think Michigan's been playing slightly better lacrosse down the stretch here. So I'm going to pick Michigan by in a close one. I'm going to pick Michigan 1-3 goals again. I don't think this will get out of hand by any means. Another important game here in terms of the Ivy League is Brown taking on Cornell here. Now, for Brown, once again, they're not anywhere near sniffing an at-large bid. That's not going to happen. At this point for Brown, they're just trying to get into the Ivy tournament. Right now, they're sitting at 1-3 here in the basement. Mathematically, I suppose they could already be out unless Harvard and Yale kind of lose out from here. So I'm not sure. I do this part-time, people. I'm not going to sit down and try to figure out every single detail while I'm busy at work as well. But I know that, you know, their only hope of anything is to just win out here. So I don't know if they've been mathematically eliminated yet, but in the end, I don't care because I think that Cornell is going to handle them. If we come down here and we look at the standings, Cornell 3-1. So we've got two teams at 3-1. We've got.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Three teams with three wins at the top of the Ivy here. So it's really going to come down to Harvard and Yale. Who's going to punch that ticket to the tournament in the end? But Cornell, edge to Cornell everywhere. Edge to Cornell offensively at this point. Edge to Cornell in terms of the cage. Chase Erland has definitely been better than the people's goalie overall. Gunty is a better faceoff guy. Matthew Gunty for Brown is definitely a better faceoff guy than anything that Cornell has at this point. But between Petrakis and Kaskaden, they should be fine at the dot. They're not going to get absolutely roached or anything like that. So I don't see a possession disparity being an issue at all. So I'm going to pick Cornell, and I think by a margin, 5-7 goals or so, I think is reasonable. Maybe take a slow burn to victory because Brown is just not going to lay down and die by any means. But I do think Cornell ends up winning that game by as many as maybe 5-7 goals. It could be closer than that, though. But definite edge goes to Cornell. The next one I want to talk about, and this one's important because if we look at what's happening in the Patriot, we have Army sitting at the top at 6-0. So Boston U and Lehigh are both sitting with 8-3 records overall and both with a 5-1 conference record, with Navy right behind them and Loyola not too far off pace here. So in terms of jockeying for position for Patriot League, for the Patriot League tournament seedings and everything like that, hugely important in terms of trying to do anything that you can to improve your resume so that in that event you don't win your tournament, you at least have a shot at sniffing an at-large bid. This game is hugely important for both of them as well. If we look at their resumes here, Boston U, that loss to Vermont to start the season, that would have been a huge win for them that they did not pick up. But then they go on to win, 7 games in a row, picked up a quality, decent win against Bryant and UMass. Colgate's not terrible. They get a decent win over Harvard. They lose to Navy and Yale back-to-back, though. That loss to Navy was a real kick in the pants. And then they beat Loyola. So they've got two chances here to pick up wins against quality RPI teams to end the season, and then they've got the Patriot League tournament to continue to build on that resume. Like I said, either of these teams are really going to most likely have to win their tournament to get in. I don't see the Patriot getting two teams, but let's say Boston U wins out. They beat Lehigh, they beat Army. Let's say Boston U rolls to the Patriot League finals and loses to Army. That might be enough to get them an at-large bid here, depending on how Syracuse finishes up and some of the other teams that are on the bubble, some of the Big Ten teams that are on the bubble. Teams like Ohio State and Michigan not finishing well, that's going to help all these teams as well because the Big Ten won't get as many teams in. So this game is hugely important for both of them. If we look at Lehigh's resume, I feel like they may even have a slightly better resume because you have a loss to Cornell, a loss to Army, and a loss to Georgetown. Those are all decent losses. You've beaten Navy, Binghamton, both solid teams. That's rough also. They only have a chance really to get a quality win against Boston U here. So I think Lehigh more than likely has to win their tournament. I think they have no shot at an at-large bid here at this point. They've got to win the Patriot League tournament. I think Boston U could at least smell it. Boston U has a chance to be the last team in with an at-large or one of the first couple of teams out with an at-large. But we get back to the matchup in itself. Surprisingly, Lehigh's offense has been almost as good, if not better, overall than Boston U's. Scott Cole has put up 58 points, Christian Moulet 57 points, and Tiernan coming in third with 40. You compare that to Vince Dalto, 54, Perfetto's 49, and Timmy Lay's 45. I mean, these guys are all hanging here in terms of offensively at the top. So normally, in beginning of the season, I would have said definite advantage to Boston U in terms of the offensive firepower. Not really the case here at this point. Goalies, Nick Pecora has been much better in cage over Matt Garber. Garber has gotten hot a couple of times, but he's prone to having down days. Pecora has been solid. And then the faceoff dot, this is going to be very important here. We've got Mike Sisselberger winning 66% of his draws with 127 GBs for Lehigh, going up against Connor Calderon for Boston U, who's won 56%. Calderon, very capable faceoff guy, but Mike Sisselberger is one of the player pimps in the league, in the country. So the definite edge goes to Lehigh in this one. But overall, I like Boston U's defense just a smidge better. So I think this is going to be an absolute dogfight. I hate picking a winner in this one because it's going to be such a great game, and I hate being wrong. I'm going to go with Boston U just because that was the team that I picked to win the Patriot League earlier in the year, and I think they are starting to play better lacrosse now. So I'm going to go with Boston U. Hope they got their stuff figured out, and I'm going to say they're going to win in a close one, 1-3 goals. All right. Notre Dame and Carolina. Now, this is pretty much a must-win for Carolina. If Carolina drops both of these games to Notre Dame, they will be one of like the first three or four teams out of the tournament, but I think they will definitely be out of the tournament. That would put them at 500, and if you go through their resume here, that's a solid win right there against Hopkins. They got that loss to Ohio State. They beat Syracuse. Loss to Denver is not terrible. They beat Brown. That's good. They lose to Duke. So their losses are all to solid teams. That Syracuse loss dragged their RPI more than any other. Their RPI is still higher than Syracuse's, though, even if their rank was similar. So they, I think if Carolina can split one of these games with Notre Dame, I think that probably gets Carolina in because they don't have a bad loss and they have a couple of good quality wins. If they lose both of these games, I think that's going to make them one of the first three teams out, and that will be the end of their season. So I don't think it's a stretch to say for Carolina this is just about a must win, except for the fact then they can turn around, and if they lose this one, they can turn around and pick the win up the following week against Notre Dame again. Offensively, definite edge goes to Notre Dame overall. You look at the point totals here where it looks like Carolina might be hanging with them, but Carolina's played a lot more games here. Carolina hanging at 12 games to Notre Dame's 9. So definite edge to the Carolina off or to the Notre Dame offense. Carolina does not have anyone that's going to be able to handle these top three guys here between Kavanaugh's, the brothers Kavanaugh and Eric Dobson. And what a story here. Quinn McCann running two ways and scoring, putting up 16 points here so far. I love that. In terms of the goalie battle, I think the definite edge goes to Notre Dame, but don't front on Colin Krieg. He can come out and he can play tough. The North Carolina defense is not very good, so that's, I think, where Krieg's numbers are down compared to last year a little bit. So definite edge to Notre Dame in terms of the goalkeeping, and then an edge, I'd say a fairly definite edge to Tyre and North Carolina in terms of the faceoff dot. I don't think the faceoff dot's going to change the face of this game in any way. I think Notre Dame rolls to 5-7 goal victory, if not more. Carolina has to win, though, at least one of these next two to even have any shot at getting an at large. If they drop both of these, I think they're going to be one of the first three teams out. And then for Notre Dame, they're in. They just have to continue to improve the resume and jockey for either the 1-2 or the 3 seed, depending on how they finish up here. Princeton and Harvard. Now, this one is important, as we said, because Princeton's sitting at 3-1 in the Ivy, so they've punched their ticket to the Ivy League tournament, I think, for the most part. We have, I guess they could lose their last two, and that could make things rough on them here. So I'm not sure exactly how that works, but Princeton's got the better resume here or whatnot. But Harvard, you know, they're fighting for that spot in the Ivy League tournament against Yale for the most part. So kind of a must win for Harvard. Harvard for sure, no shot at an at-large bid. They have to make the Ivy League tournament and win it. Princeton, I think, is in a similar boat. I think the Ivy League probably only gets one team in unless Cornell makes it to the finals and doesn't lose in the Ivy League finals. I think that would be, I think if one of these three or four teams wins the Ivy League, I think Cornell would be the only team in the Ivy that could pull an at-large bid here. Cornell, the definite favorite at this point, I think, though, to win the Ivy League tournament. They're playing better lacrosse. Defensively, they're a little sketchy, but Chase Erlin has actually been playing really well down the stretch for them. And I'm not supposed to be talking about Cornell here at this point. So Princeton. I like Princeton in this game. Both teams sitting at 5-5. Princeton sitting far prettier in terms of Ivy League seeding and positioning right now. Offensively, I give the edge to Princeton. They have a little bit more depth. Vardaro's been picking it up lately. Sam English is always good. Christian Ronda, you know, Jake Stevens, two-way midfielder. Sam King is filthy for Harvard, and he's put up points, but, you know, they're young beyond that overall. Goalie situation here, definite edge to Michael Gianforcaro for Princeton, 57% so far this season between the pipes to Christian Bernard's 47. So definite edge to Princeton. And then at the faceoff dot here, we end up with that's going to be a draw here. Tyler Sandoval and Ginder overall, they've been decent. And then you got the DeGenero for Harvard, who's sitting at 44% as well. So that's a wash. Definite edge, I think, overall in this game to Princeton. I think they should be the favorite, but this could go either way. I'm going to go with Princeton 1-3 goals because they're at home, and I think they're a slightly better team despite some of their struggles. Another game, because this has America East implications on the line. If we look at the America East standings, Binghamton and Bryant are both sitting at 4-1. So what they're fighting for here is pretty much who's going to get the home game in the tournament. Maybe I can't remember if the first round of the America East tournament is at the home school's place or if they play at the neutral location or whoever the host school is. Not sure, but it looks like these guys are hanging out in here, and Albany and these guys will be fighting it out for the final spots. But huge game for both of these teams here. Binghamton unexpectedly having a really good year. And this, once again, for sure, neither of these teams have any shot at an at-large bid. Their only chance is to get a good seed in the America East tournament, win the America East tournament, and get in. So it'll be all of these types of games here are just going to be interesting to see how they play out, because it's going to be a glimpse at future matchups in their tournaments, and we can kind of figure out what those look like. Definite edge, I think, in this one would go to Binghamton offensively. I can't believe I'm saying that, but I think Binghamton has been a little bit more consistent offensively. I think Bryant has a little bit more depth offensively, but I like Matthew Keegan and Thomas Greenblatt, what they've been doing for the Bearcats. Goalie situation here. Connor Winters has the definite edge over Teagan Alexander for Bryant. So the Binghamton goalie, Connor Winters, has a slight edge. Not even a slight edge. It's a definite edge. And then the faceoff guys. This will be a very good matchup to watch here. Binghamton has two guys take a bunch of draws, so they'll go with the double-headed monster. Similar with Bryant, albeit Alexander won't take quite as many as Lilliberty. I keep saying Lilliberty because I don't – or Lilibert. I don't know how to pronounce it. Sorry. But, yeah, that should be a battle at the faceoff dot. And whoever wins that battle – very well could end up winning this game. So we'll watch that closely. In the end, it's Bryant at home. I'm going to be a homer here. I live right down the road from Binghamton University. I'm going to take Binghamton in a close game. I think Binghamton will win on the road in a close one in this one. Virginia, Syracuse, as we said, pretty much a must win for Syracuse. I hear a lot of people saying they think Syracuse is still a bubble team, even if Syracuse beats Virginia this weekend and Notre Dame next weekend. I think that is stupid. I think if Syracuse beats Virginia this weekend, they are a bubble team. And I think that if they beat Virginia this weekend, they have a very good shot at being the last team in terms of at-large bids. I think if they beat Virginia and Notre Dame, which I understand it is an insanely tall task here at this point to pull that off, I think if they win their last two, Syracuse does, then I think they're in. I think it's not even a last team in at that point. I think they end up getting in, you know, maybe the second to the last or the third to the last team in if they win both of those games. But I think if they can beat Virginia this weekend, I think that's just about a resume that might be good enough to get you in. And the reason I say that is history would indicate it's not great. Syracuse's RPI right now, I think, is in the area of like 15 or 16 or something like that. This win would probably put them in the area of like 12, 13 or so. The key here, though, is they have no bad losses. So when the RPIs are close for these teams that are trying to get at-large bids, they're going to look at – one of the first things they're going to look at is quality wins. Who do you what do you have for top five wins? What do you have for wins between 5 and 10 and all of that? Syracuse right now doesn't have those. So you give Syracuse a top five RPI win over Virginia. Now they've got a top 25 RPI win over Vermont, top 25 RPI win over Princeton, and a top 25, like a top 20, top 15 RPI win over Carolina. You give them a top five RPI win to go with that resume and no bad losses, because all of their losses are to veritable killers. Like, that's a top five RPI team, top five RPI team, top five RPI team, top five RPI team. You know, their losses are all but one to a top five RPI team. And when they lost to North Carolina here, their RPI was like seventh or ninth or something like that. So zero bad losses with enough quality wins because their strength of schedule is tough. I think you win one of these two, you barely get in. I think you win both of these games, you get in fairly easy without sweating it too much here. For Virginia, they're in. It doesn't matter. So let's shut up about my team's chances of making the tournament now, and let's just go general what's going to happen here. Offensively, weirdly enough, right now, offensively, I like Syracuse's offense a little bit more for only one reason. They're far more efficient. They're putting up points with way less possessions. Virginia has one of the best faceoff guys in the country. Syracuse has one of the worst faceoff units in the country. Syracuse is still able to put points up offensively because they've been extremely efficient. They're getting depth all the way down their roster. Yes, Spallina chilling out here with 61 points overall. But you look at Hiltz isn't too far behind. You look at Kirst, Finn Thompson, and you got a lot of youngsters here that are all 20 points and higher, whereas even Virginia doesn't get that much depth in their scoring overall. Couple that with the fact Connor Schellenberger's not playing all that great. That's limiting Xander Dixon over the last couple of games as well. Syracuse is going to have a hard time with Cormier, McConvey, those types of guys. I don't think they're built to guard those guys, especially with their top two defenders out, to the point where you're bringing Alexo down to cover attackmen, and now you've got guys like McConvey killing people, Schutz killing people out top. Jeff Connor's going to be a problem. So I still think slight edge to the Syracuse offense. The problem's going to become Petey fucking LaSala, 56% so far in the season. That's not great numbers for him, but compared to what Syracuse has done, Jack Fine probably should take the bulk of these draws here because Richie USA has been pretty bad, but definite edge to Virginia at the faceoff dot. That is going to completely negate any offensive efficiency numbers that Syracuse have that look better than Virginia. So in the end, between faceoff wins and offense, Virginia has a definite edge. And then in cage, definite edge goes to Syracuse for Will Mark. Defensively, definite edge goes to Virginia. So, I mean, Syracuse probably going to lose this game, especially if Schellenberger is starting to get healthy, more and more healthy as each week wears on here, because he has not looked all that great here. So definite edge to Virginia. My pick here, I'm going to not pick with my heart, and I'm going to say, yeah, screw it, I'm picking with my heart. Syracuse by a goal, baby. The magic of the number 22 is back. And one of the things I want to be clear about, anytime I talk about the magic of number 22 being back, somebody, and I believe it was a Virginia fan, I'm drawing a blank on the woman's name here, and I'm embarrassed because I should know it. From the Facebook lacrosse forum, I had mentioned the magic of 22 and all of that, and she had thrown out there that, well, there's a lot of other guys, freshmen, that are playing really well that aren't wearing the number 22. Yeah, when I say the magic of 22 is back, that does not mean that Joey Spallina is the end-all be-all for this team here. What it means is that there is some magic that is involved in this number 22, and when someone wearing that number is playing well for Syracuse, it ends up playing well for everybody else on that roster, and all of those dudes get to sniff a little bit of that magic. Enter Michael Leo, scoring the game-winning goal last weekend. Yes, he did that. He's a freshman. He scored the game-winning goal. He's the one that's having a great season here this year so far and has been one of the more consistent Syracuse midfielders, especially on the Dodge. What I'm saying is that number 22 just doles magic out to everybody all willy-nilly here. So anyway, I'm going to pick Syracuse by a goal only because of the number 22, and I think Will Mark is going to put up 20 saves in this one. So that's what I said with that. Like I said, my record for picking winners this year would look a lot better if I didn't pick with my heart and take Syracuse way more often than I ever should. Next one. This is a big one too here because it's once again going to play into each team's tournament seedings here. So we got St. Joseph's 3-0 at the top of the A-10, UMass at 2-1 at the top of the A-10, Richmond's in the hunt here, High Point, Hobart are both in the hunt as well. So if we look at matchups here, one very interesting matchup here that we're going to want to watch is going to be Zach Cole, one of the faceoff pimps in the country, sitting at 64% at this point, just one of the absolute killers in terms of winning that draw. The dude wins draws, taking on the drip king, Caleb Hammett of UMass here. Hammett, a solid faceoff guy, young guy, sitting at 57%. This is his, I believe, maybe his first matchup against Cole, who is an absolute killer. So that will be an interesting matchup to watch because I think UMass can hang with St. Joseph's everywhere else. I think UMass has been playing tough defensively. I think Note has been very good. Note, I actually gave Note an All-American nod at the midseason in Cage, and I think he's been very good in goal. So I think that defensively, UMass matches up well against the offensive powers that St. Joseph's has. I think where this game is going to come down to legitimately is going to be at the faceoff dot between the Drip King and Zach Cole. If Zach Cole smokes the Drip King and wins 60-40, win goes to St. Joseph's almost for sure, but make no mistake, Matt Note is a killer in Cage. If he gets hot, he could definitely even out that possession disparity and make this interesting. I think the edge definitely goes to St. Joseph's in terms of offensive firepower. Carter Page, Levi Anderson, Bomer, they're all absolute killers. So I'm going to pick St. Joseph's. I think that Cole probably gets the better of Hammett here on the day. I think St. Joseph's is a little bit deeper offensively, and I don't know that Note can win the game for UMass in a game like this. So I'm going to go with St. Joseph's to win by a couple of goals. We got Maryland and Hopkins going. And like I said, all these teams make the tournament. Maryland and Hopkins both have RPIs. No matter what happens to them, I think, through the rest of the season, I think Maryland and Hopkins both already have a bid here in the tournament. So I don't think that's going to be at play. And if we look at the standings here right now, they're both sitting atop the Big Ten standings at 3-1 with Penn State. So this game's huge. It's important. It's going to play into who gets byes in the Big Ten tournament and all that crap here. So in the end, Hopkins has been playing crazy, but if we look at what Maryland has done over their last two, they beat Ohio State and Rutgers after dropping that rough one there to Michigan versus what Hopkins has done. They had that loss to Penn State and then beat the crap out of Ohio State. So I think this one's kind of a wash. So let's go through positionally here what I think happens. I think offensively, pretty good matchups overall. I think this is kind of a wash offensively. And Angeles, Degnan, Melendez, they've definitely put a bunch of points up overall, but streaky. They're not going to show up every single game. Hopkins at 10-4. A couple of those games that they've lost, those guys weren't huge. I think that the huge keys here, though, have been Brendan Grimes and Matt Collison anchoring the midfield a little bit for Hopkins, so that's going to be key. You know, Maryland, Irksa Kelly. Maryland is just, they don't have any killers, but then again, neither does Hopkins. So they just have both teams are just pretty balanced. But I'm going to give a slight edge to Hopkins offensively overall. In terms of goalkeeping, goalies have been streaky. As we know, McNaney's out, so Ruppel's been getting the starts. Marcille has been benched at times, has looked good at times. Who knows what's going to happen there, but I'd give a slight edge to Maryland in Cage because I think Ruppel's been a little bit more consistent. And then at the faceoff dot, no matter what happens in Cage, offensively, defensively, or whatever, Luke Wehrman is the faceoff killer, and definite edge to Maryland in that way. I think in the end, I'm going to go with Maryland in a close game, 1-2 goals. They're playing at home. It's a huge game for both teams here. I think Hopkins is going to come in hungry as crap, but I think what's going to happen is that Maryland defensively, I think, is going to be able to do a good job against the Hopkins offense. I think Wehrman winning draws is going to be a strain all game long on Hopkins. And then the goalie, it's going to require Tim Marcille to stand on his head. Whoever Hopkins puts in Cage, assuming it's Marcille, 15 to 18 saves, we've got a ball game, and it'll come right down to it. 12 saves will not be enough, and Maryland's going to win this game in that case. So I'm going to go with Maryland 1-3 goals. I think it'll be a close game. Navy and Army. A lot of people were complaining that, oh, man, you got Army-Navy game same weekend as, like, Maryland-Hopkins. That's crap. You know, what are you going to do? Army and Navy aren't looking at the fucking Hopkins schedule to try to figure out when they play Maryland to schedule their games. I thought that was just a stupid thing to complain about. But Twitter, again, you got a lot of divas on Twitter complaining about dumb shit. Probably I fall victim at times as well. Army. I'm gonna go with Army. Navy, very disappointing early in the season. They have been playing much better, as we see here. They have wins against nobodies, and then they roll together, what was it, 6 straight losses. Did not look good. That included a loss to Manhattan, a loss to High Point, a loss to Colgate. So not very good. Navy's only shot at making the NCAA tournament would be to win the Patriot League tournament. I don't like their chances of doing that overall. I think Army wins this game, not necessarily by a margin, but you know, anywhere from 2 to 5 goals, I think, would be fair game here. What we learned with Army, though, and we learned this with Maryland as well, Maryland lost 5 of their top 6 leading scorers, and it showed. The only saving grace for Maryland is they were so much better than everybody else last year that despite losing those 5 or 6 guys, they're still one of the best teams in the country. Army lost Nick Turn, who put up 100-plus points last year. And what they've kind of, both of these teams have proved is that if you have killers all over the field and you have dudes that are just high-quality lacrosse players all over the field, that's how you get dudes to 100-plus points. And sometimes when you lose that guy that had 100-plus points, you don't necessarily drop all that much in quality because the guys that helped that guy put up the 100-plus points are still there. And that was the case with Army. Army lost Nick Turn. They didn't lose a whole lot. Of other guys, and Burrick has ended up being huge. Plunkett's been huge. So Army's much better offensively than I thought they were. Definite edge goes to Army at this stage offensively. Army, I think, figured it out when they realized what win was it in? The game against Rutgers. They kind of stopped trying to go to the rack quite as often, a little bit too cute in terms of trying to get really good shots, and they just started letting shit rip from outside against Rutgers, and I think that was when they realized, like, hey, this is what our offense is going to be now, and they've been much better ever since that second game. Goalie situation here, advantage Navy slightly with Ryan, but that's a wash. I think they're close enough. Face-off dot here, definite advantage to Will Colletti and Army, so that's going to play pretty heavily into this game overall. So yeah, I think Army wins by a margin, 3, 5, 6 goals or something like that. It could be a dogfight, could be a good game, but we'll see. If we go through here and we see some other games that matter, Yale against Albany, Yale has to win that game. I don't think Yale has the resume for an at-large at this point. You know, if you look at their losses, Penn State, Cornell, Princeton, Penn, no bad losses. They got a win over Villanova. Man, depending on what Yale does in the Ivy League tournament, maybe they could make a run in the tournament, losing the finals, and still get in. But that's rough. I think Yale's got to pretty much win out from here to punch themselves a ticket. We already talked about the Michigan and Ohio State game. Denver got to pick up a win over Providence here. You know, Denver's competing here with Georgetown in terms of the at-large bid for the Big East, or the automatic qualifier for the Big East here, and they've got to contend with Villanova and Marquette, you know, in that tournament as well. So for Denver, A, you got to win to make sure you get into your tournament and all that crap to have a shot. So they got to win this game anyway, but if they want any chance at an at-large bid, they pretty much have to win out all the way through to the Big East finals at least, and losing in the Big East finals I don't think necessarily kills them. But, you know, it's just one of those things here at this point. I'm a prognosticator. I just suck at it. So for Denver, don't lose this game to Providence because that will really screw you overall. You lose to Providence, you have zero chance at an at-large bid, and your only shot is to win your conference tournament. But then you lose to Providence. I don't know how the seedings work out. Do you end up maybe not making the conference tournament? Jacksonville needs to beat Air Force. I think they will do that. Loyola needs to beat Colgate. I think they will do that. Big one here between Drexel and Delaware. I wanted to talk about this one overall here because Drexel is surprising some people here. They ran together 5 wins here midseason, including a win over St. Joseph's and Stony Brook, you know, 2 decent teams. If we come down to the standings here, we see that Delaware and Drexel are right at the top. So this is the top 2 teams in the CAA doing battle. There will be no automatic at-large bids coming out of the CAA. Unless maybe Delaware wins out through the rest of the season, wins through their conference tournament, and then loses in the finals. But I think the only team that gets in the CAA is going to be the team that wins it. So huge, huge game for both these teams to try to line each other up, figure out what the other looks like, jockey for the top seed in the CAA tournament, But in the end, I think Delaware does beat Drexel. Delaware, definite edge in terms of offensive firepower, in terms of the goalkeeping. Matt Kilkeary for Delaware is the better goalkeeper of the two. In terms of the faceoff dot, that's where you could say Drexel has a minor margin. Justin Joseph's at 56% to Roland Hockenberry's 51% overall. But even that's semi a wash, and I think Delaware's played a tougher schedule, so that might drag their guys down. But I think Delaware wins this one, close game, but it could be anywhere from like 2 to 4 goals, I think, overall. And I think Delaware wins. What else we got here? Hobart, Richmond, that's going to factor pretty heavily. That'll be an important game. I already talked about Boston U and Lehigh. We got Villanova, Marquette. That's going to be a huge game in the Big East. What do we got? Vermont should beat UMass Lowell. Penn should beat Dartmouth. Just trying to make sure I didn't forget about anyone. We talked about that one. We talked about Binghamton. That's about it, folks. We got a Sunday game, Albany-Merrimack. Albany will probably win that game. So those are your games here. I've not talked for 53 minutes. I think that's the longest podcast of the season so far. So I'm going to shut the hell up here and get out of here. Come back. Oh, big announcement. Big announcement. I am not doing the show on Sunday anymore. I know that will disappoint a lot of you. I think I might put out some shorts on Sunday to address the fact that I'm now going to start putting the show out on Monday. I've noticed I've been rushed the last couple of weekends with summer hitting, and I feel like the quality of the show the last couple of Sundays was not equal to what it was prior weekend. So I'm going to bump the show back to Monday. We're going to go Wednesdays and Mondays here moving forward, because it'll just give me a hell of a lot more time to put together a killer show. I noticed the bulk of the views are Monday morning through Monday evening anyway. So note to everybody, Monday is going to be the recap show for this weekend. I'm going to take all day Sunday to do a killer job putting together highlights, covering more games, talking more in depth about them, because I don't want to sell anybody short. I've been selling myself short. I've been selling you all bullshit products. So that's it. I got to shut the hell up and get out of here so I can cut this up. So I will be back on Monday for the recap show. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. And Hoost is out.
The Lax Factor Podcast.